Good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, we'll get right down to business tonight. Got some interesting things to talk about. We'll start off with something a little on the light side, but it has a serious implication, too. This came from the Western Journal, January 18th, written by Jonathan Jones. And the headline reads, St. Louis calls off search for band of monkeys. Allegedly accompanied by a goat, after AI images flood social media. And here's the text. St. Louis officials have suspended an active search for monkeys reportedly loose in the city after artificial intelligence-generated images flooded social media and overshadowed actual tips. Multiple vervet monkeys were first reported this past week near a park in the northern part of the city, according to local officials. The sightings quickly triggered what city leaders described as widespread confusion. And here's a quote. It's unclear who owns the monkeys, how they got loose, or exactly how many there are. City Department of Health spokesperson Willie Springer said, KTVI, KTVI reported. Springer said the report sparked, quote, rumor after rumor, unquote, as residents began posting claims online. Some of those claims included assertions that the monkeys had been captured. Others included images purportedly showing the animals across the city. Several of those images were later determined to be fake, or AI generated, and some of the generated images got increasingly absurd. Springer said, quote, but as of Monday, the monkeys remained at large, unquote. The volume of online trolling eventually overwhelmed the response effort. Springer continued, it's been a lot in regard to AI and what's genuine and what's not. People are just having fun, like, I don't think anyone means harm, unquote. So the officials said there appeared to be some validity to the original monkey sightings. However, the flood of fabricated content sent police and animal control on what one official privately described as a wild goose chase, the Associated Press reported. Social media posts even claimed the monkeys were traveling with a goat. The fake reports complicated efforts to track real sightings. With actual leads exhausted, city officials quietly suspended the search this past Tuesday. Springer said the largest number of monkeys people reported seeing at one time was 4. He also noted that owning monkeys is illegal in the city. Animal Control has been working with primate experts at the St. Louis Zoo to locate the animals. Vervet monkeys are native to sub-Saharan Africa, where they are commonly seen. City leaders said they will resume their search efforts if valid sightings are reported. Well, when I saw that at first, I thought this was just kind of a big old joke, but the more I thought about it, I thought to myself, what if this were a serious matter and all the necessary response was being complicated by a bunch of AI images put onto the internet, or even onto official government, what's the word, not exactly websites, but communications media. That could get kind of dangerous, to say the least, because AI has become so good that you can't always tell what is a genuine image and what is a fake. It's so skillfully done now that a lot of the pictures you see on the internet pretty real. And you have to stop and think, is this really a guy, a woman, an object like an automobile? Or is it something made up and put in there with AI? I can see where that could be a little bit disconcerting for officials. Could complicate their job in certain ways. Particularly news stories, when I think back to 9/11, for example. What if some of the images were not real of the buildings collapsing, but were generated by AI? You could get mass panic. You could get all kinds of reactions. But once again, the original article I just read was from the Western Journal on January 18, 2026. Well, now, moving on to a different topic. Here's from the Washington Times. And the headline reads, Pennsylvania Governor Shapiro says Harris, that would be vice president at the time, Kamala Harris, her camp quizzed him on whether he had been an Israeli double agent. And this is by Valerie Richardson, the Washington Times, Monday, January 19th. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro said the Harris campaign asked whether he had ever served as a, quote, double agent for Israel, unquote, during the vice presidential vetting process, offering an inside look at the challenges facing Jewish Democrats amid the rise of the pro-Palestinian left. In his memoir, set to be released next week, Mr. Shapiro said he was surprised and affronted when 2024 Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris's team began quizzing him on his views about Israel, including his role, if any, with the government. And here's a quote from Mr. Shapiro. Had I been a double agent for Israel? Mr. Shapiro paraphrased in this book, according to excerpts that went viral Monday after being published by the New York Times, CNN, and other outlets. He said Dana Remus, R-E-M-U-S, former Biden White House counsel and senior member of the Harris campaign's vetting team, asked if he had been, quote, an agent of the Israeli government, unquote. Mr. Shapiro asked in the book, was she kidding? Adding, I told her how offensive the question was. Ms. Remus replied, well, we have to ask, before adding, have you ever communicated with an undercover agent for Israel? Mr. Shapiro said he was stunned. And this is a quote from him. If they were undercover, I responded, how the hell would I know? He wrote that in his book. And he said, where we keep the light. Stories from a Life of Service. Oh, I guess that's the title of the book, Where We Keep the Light. Stories from a Life of Service. And it's scheduled to be released January 27th, just a few days from now. And Mr. Shapiro went on, I calmly answered her questions. Remus was just doing her job. I get it, he wrote. But the fact that she asked, or was told to ask, that question by someone else said a lot about people around the vice president, unquote. The rest is history. Ms. Harris selected Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate, confounding politicos who said Mr. Shapiro could have delivered Pennsylvania a must-win swing state. She ultimately lost Pennsylvania to President Trump by 120,000 votes. The book's account drew outrage from Jewish leaders, including Deborah Lipstadt, the State Department's anti-Semitism envoy under President Biden. Ms. Lipstadt said Monday on social media, quote, the more I read about Shapiro's treatment in the vetting process, the more disturbed I become. These questions were classic anti-Semitism, unquote. Representative Josh Gottheimer, New Jersey Democrat, called the account outrageous, saying Monday on social media that such, quote, insinuation and targeting is anti-Semitism, plain and simple, unquote. Also condemning the vetting was conservative author and podcast host Hugh Hewitt, who called the questions, quote, so anti-Semitic, my eyes roll back when I read them, because those are classic tropes. The question, the real question is, what did the Harris team think they were doing? Mr. Hewitt asked on Fox News Channel. Ms. Harris and Ms. Remus have not commented publicly on the book. But in her campaign memoir, 107 Days, the former vice president said she didn't pick Mr. Shapiro because she worried he would want to be co-president instead of settling for a subordinate role. Mr. Shapiro's biography includes a stint at an Israeli kibbutz in high school, during which he volunteered at a farm, a fishery, and an Israeli army base. But he didn't have a military role, his officer said. Robbie Soave, or Soave, S-O-A-V-E, senior editor of the libertarian outlet Reason, said he thought the Harris campaign taking a pass on Mr. Shapiro was idiotic, but that the governor's complaints about the vetting came across as whining. And this is a quote from Mr. Soave. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Quote, he previously bragged about being a volunteer for the IDF. This is about Shapiro now. In a non-military role during a study abroad program in Israel. It's not so crazy to ask him about it. Or scrutinizes Israel views in general. It's not because he's Jewish. It's because he studied in Israel. Unquote. Mr. Shapiro wouldn't have been the first Jewish candidate to appear on the presidential ticket. That milestone was achieved by former Senator Joseph Lieberman, who was Democratic presidential nominee Al Gore's running mate in the 2000 election. Mr. Hewitt said, quote, I'm very certain nobody asked Joe Lieberman from Team Gore, are you an agent of the Mossad? Times have changed. Hewitt continued, it's astonishing to me that the Democratic Party is a Jewish problem. They don't like them, and the left wing is ascendant in the Democratic Party. And it's a burden that the Democratic Party candidates in 2028 are going to share with Governor Shapiro. Mr. Shapiro is running for re-election in November, but he also is seen as a short-list candidate for the party's 2028 presidential nomination. Once again, that was from the Washington Times. Monday, January 19th, 2026. All right, now here's something concerning the man that was picked to be the vice presidential candidate, Tim Walz. And Kamala Harris picked Walz, I guess, because she thought he was safe. He wasn't Jewish. But she got a lot of criticism for that. And now he's mired in his own complications in the state of Minnesota. So now, this is from the Western Journal, entitled, Tim Walz Finally Addresses Leftist Church Invasion with Absolutely Pathetic Statement. This is by C. Douglas Golden, January 20th, 2026. A little over a year ago, the Democratic Party decided that Minnesota Governor Tim Walz was the kind of person we needed to be one heartbeat or one maleficent act away from the Oval Office. Today, he's not even running for a third term as governor of Minnesota because his state is mired in a welfare fraud scandal of gargantuan proportions. Worse, when the Department of Homeland Security and Department of Justice showed up at his doorstep to do what he could not, enforce the law, particularly as it pertained to the immigrant communities where the massive fraud was centered, he threw numerous hissy fits of abundant verbosity about that fact. He egged on activists taken to the streets in this good old fiery but mostly peaceful protest. But when one of those groups invaded a church service and seemingly violated federal civil rights law in the process, not to mention other laws, but those are pretty much child's play at this point, how much of a rousing condemnation could the governor muster? Two sentences through his office, and only when he was prodded by Fox News. So for those of you who didn't watch the farce unfold this weekend, a group calling itself the Radical Justice Network stormed City's Church in St. Paul, Minnesota on Sunday, all with former CNN host Don Lemon, or I believe now he could likes to call himself Lamont, not only providing an as-it-happened narration of events, but confronting one of the pastors about their stance on immigration law. The reason? Another one of the pastors of the church worked with Minnesota's Immigration and Customs Enforcement field office, ICE, that is. Lamont, I think that's the way he likes to say it now, so I'll continue saying it that way. Lamont, as you can hear in the video, believes that this is constitutionally protected because you get to make people uncomfortable anytime, any place. Which means that we can start a Lamont Finder app that tracks the former CNN anchor when he's out in public and incites flash mobs to make him uncomfortable too, right? That's what the First Amendment says, according to constitutional scholar Don Lamont. Except, not quite. Not only are you prohibited from this kind of behavior, but a phalanx of state and local ordinances designed to keep people from becoming criminal nuisances on private property. There's also the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, or FACE Act, enacted under the Clinton administration. This was designed to stop religious protesters from getting too near to abortion clinics. And it was used promiscuously by Merrick Garland's Department of Justice during the Joe Biden administration. However, herein lies the problem for Mr. Lamont and company. The law also includes this text protecting religious congregations as well. And here's a quote from the actual law. Whoever by force or threat of force, or by physical obstruction, intentionally injures, intimidates, or interferes with, or attempts to injure, intimidate, or interfere with any person lawfully exercising or seeking to exercise the First Amendment right of religious freedom at a place of religious worship, shall be subject to the penalties provided in subsection B and the civil remedies provided in subsection C, unquote. With the application of other federal laws, the Biden administration was able to threaten pro-life advocates with a decade or more in prison. Given that this is a pretty clear violation of federal civil rights law, one that doesn't necessarily reflect well on the, quote, mostly peaceful, unquote, part of the protest that the left loves to emphasize, you'd think Walz would get out in front of this and tell people to cut it out and do something productive. Instead, he gave this two-sentence statement on Monday afternoon after being prodded by Fox News. And here's the statement by Walz, Governor Walz. Quote, the governor has repeatedly and unequivocally urged protesters to do so peacefully. While people have a right to speak out, he in no way supports interrupting a place of worship, unquote. First thing, two sentences? Dude, to quote your own tribe, do better. Second thing, I don't know that the characterization that Walz has, quote, repeatedly and unequivocally urged protesters to do so peacefully, unquote, is anywhere near accurate. But to the extent that it is, he has repeatedly and unequivocally urged protesters to protest harder. Part of it is because of democratic dogma. Part of it is because we've forgotten all about feeding our future in those Somali-run blaring. And I'll just interject. Remember one of those signs at one of these clinics that was supposedly got funds with all the kids that, but the kids weren't there. They had the sign, instead of learning, they had left out the N and was blaring. So let me read that again so it makes sense. Part of it is because of democratic dogma. Part of it is because we've forgotten all about feeding our future. And I'll interject there. I think that was the name of one of these fraudulent groups or fraudulent daycare centers, I think. And those Somali-run blaring centers that are still at the center of a multi-billion-dollar sham that taxpayers in Minnesota and elsewhere are on the hook for. Let me skip down just a little bit here. of a church in seemingly contravention of federal law during Sunday services brought clicks by activist and Don Lemon, as if the two groups were separate, but I digress, has become emblematic of the excesses that show the far left still hasn't learned their lesson. Waltz's tossed-off response, in short, is more proof that Kamala Harris's decision-making regarding who should be first in line for the presidency should a tragedy occur was far worse than America's. And that, again, came from the Western Journal. Tim Walz finally addresses leftist church invasion, January 20th, 2026. Okay, we got a few other things about that church invasion, but just to have a little variety, let's go to something different for a few minutes. This is from WorldNet Daily. Remember Dr. Fauci? Well, things keep coming up about him and his lack of forthrightness concerning COVID. This article says Fauci privately called natural immunity impressive before forcing COVID jabs on Americans. Biden officials had, quote, scientific evidence they were unjustifiable for millions of Americans. This was by Emily Kopp. It originated at the Daily Caller News Foundation and was reprinted with that permission on WorldNet Daily. Anthony Fauci, and I should say also the date was January 18th. Anthony Fauci privately acknowledged, quote, impressive data, unquote, showed stronger immunity from a COVID-19 infection than vaccination, while publicly pushing mandated shots, new documents just released show. Former President Joe Biden's top pandemic response officials discussed a thorough study from Israel showing the superiority of natural infection in August 2021. So we're talking a good 4.5 years ago. Simultaneous with the initiation of federal vaccine mandates via an August 24th Pentagon memo, according to documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act by Protect the Public's Trust, that's the name of the group, indicating officials who helped compel COVID shots had contemporaneous scientific evidence they were unjustifiable for millions of Americans. The officials distorted the evidence in public statements, repeatedly saying vaccination is necessary for immunity. And here we have a quote from Protect the Public's Trust Director, Michael Chamberlain. What does this say about our own institutions that, despite billions spent every year, Americans have to rely on Israeli research for their health information? And that our own officials tried to bury what didn't fit their preferred narrative. Those are the words of Protect the Public's Trust Director Michael Chamberlain, as he told the Daily Caller News Foundation. And he went on, there's been a lot of hand-wringing about reforms and personnel actions by the new leadership at HHS. But this is just more evidence that the public health bureaucracy was ripe for a thorough house cleaning, unquote. The revelation comes amid an ongoing investigation under President Donald Trump's Food and Drug Administration, FDA, Commissioner Marty McCarry, into deaths following the COVID vaccines in children and young adults. Further details could uncover whether people died from shots mandated by Biden administration officials aware of their redundancy for people with prior immunity. And here's a quote. This is the evidence right here showing that our nation's scientific leaders were not acting scientifically. And there needs to be accountability, said Stephanie Edward Weidel, W-E-I-D-L-E, Executive Director of Feds for Freedom, to the Daily Caller News Foundation. She went on, we in the medical freedom fighting world, we already knew this, but to see it spelled out in these Freedom of Information documents just makes it worse. People lost their jobs and their lives were turned upside down based on the argument that natural immunity was not enough. unquote. And some of you may know that for quite some time, we asked for prayers. And I'll ask them again for a doctor who was supporting us up in the Philadelphia area. He lost his job because he didn't knuckle under and get the so-called safe and effective COVID shot. And I've kind of lost track, but I'll certainly ask for your prayers for him, because he was courageous enough to stick his neck out and say, I'm not going to take this shot that has not been tested thoroughly, that may not be safe, as we now suspect it wasn't, and was largely ineffective. Remember, they changed the definition of vaccine just so they could market these shots. Prior to the time of COVID, vaccine meant an injection that would prevent a disease from happening. Polio shot, measles shot. In the old days, various kinds of shots, smallpox. When you got a smallpox vaccine, you were pretty doggone sure you weren't going to get smallpox. Well, I got a polio vaccine. I got the shot, and I got the oral vaccine within a year or two of each other when I was still an elementary school student. And polio has largely disappeared from the world scene. And so I'm not against vaccines. Believe me, I have taken vaccines myself a number of times. I don't choose to get the flu vaccine. Some people that are my good friends do. That's the personal choice. But getting back to the main topic here, I also at this time mention I still have about six copies of my book that Elizabeth, my late wife, and I wrote together 2 or 3 years ago about COVID and coming chaos. And I will send that out for free to anybody that writes me, but don't wait, because once they're gone, and I don't believe I'm going to have enough money to reorder. You have to get quite a few copies if you want to reorder the book from the publisher. If you'd like that book, I'd appreciate it if you could just send a little bit of money for the mailing cost. Maybe $5 doesn't cost much more than that, usually, if it's just one book. And I may have to limit it to one book a piece, since the number of copies are so few. Just write to me, Lou Caverly, L-O-U-C-A-V as in Victor, E-R as in Rodeo, L-Y, and the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip is 21609. And if you write to me, I will get the book out. I had a request. I've had a couple requests in the last month. And for a while there, nobody was requesting the book. So I'm pleased that someone is still anxious to get it. And as you can see from this article, this is an article that came out just a few days ago, January 18th. So the whole story of COVID is not yet finalized. And our book criticized a lot of the things that were going on as we were writing it. The mandates that were making people lose their jobs. The mandates that were requiring U.S. servicemen and women to get shots. Even though the vaccines were not tested with the thoroughness that previous vaccines have been tested with. In fact, we disputed the fact that they even had a right to call them vaccines, since it became more and more clear that people who got the vaccine still got COVID in numerous cases. I personally know several people that were vaccinated with the COVID vaccines. They got COVID anyway. So if you'd like that book, again, write to me. Just say, please send me your COVID book, or just send me your book. Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And remember that the supply is very, very limited, so write soon if you would like a copy. Now, getting back to this article, I might have skipped down. It's a rather lengthy article, well written too. You might want to get a copy, and I'll say again at the end of the article, the source. It says privately, Fauci, National Institutes of Health, NIH Director Francis Collins, acknowledged the strength of an Israeli study featured in the news division of the prestigious journal Science, showing people who had recovered from a natural infection were 13 times more protected against subsequent infections than those vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine. Publicly, the NIH launched a public relations blitz for indiscriminate vaccine mandates. I'll interrupt again. I'm not sure that this article even mentions it. But at the time, they even said children were very unlikely to get COVID, and if they did, it was very mild. Yet they required vaccines anyway, in spite of that. We could never figure that out. It does make you wonder about that motivation and how close they were to some of the drug companies, but I can't really say one way or the other about that. But it does make you kind of suspicious. And Fauci conceded in an August 27, 2021 email, quote, "The data in the Israeli study, as reported in the news article, look rather impressive. But I would imagine that it is more complicated than we think. It is conceivable and possibly likely that those who have had a serious systemic infection develop a high level of immunity that even surpasses that of full vaccination." And that again was a Fauci email, August 27, 2021, with the subject line, RE, post-infection protection versus vaccine immunity. Well, there's more to the article, but I think it gets a little technical, and our time is zooming past. We're already half done with the program. So, let me just skip down a little bit and see if there's anything else. John T. Brooks, Chief Medical Officer for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, shared that other studies showed that prior infection was stronger, too, including one demonstrating antibodies declined more rapidly each month by 40% versus less than 5% from vaccination in comparison to prior immunity. Brooks shared a slide with results and a warning at the bottom, for internal use only, not for further distribution. So there you have it. They were trying to cover things up, like so much of government actions in all kinds of fields. If you're interested in reading the whole article, it's from this WorldNetDaily, coming actually from the Daily Caller News Foundation, but published by WorldNetDaily on January 18th, 2026. All right, another topic. As far as immigration goes, England or Great Britain. This is from Zero Hedge. UK, United Kingdom migrant crime surge. Foreigners top 79% of theft arrests. 40% of violent suspects on trains. This is by Tyler Durden, again from ZeroHedge.com, January 18th, 2026. Now, it was authored by Thomas Brook via Remix News. So it was being republished, I guess, by Zero Hedge. Foreign nationals accounted for 79% of all arrests for theft on trains in Britain last year, and 40% of all railway arrests. New data from British Transport Police has revealed. The figures were published as part of a Freedom of Information request submitted by the Center for Migration Control, the CMC think tank. They showed that despite comprising a minority of the overall population, foreign nationals were disproportionately responsible for several categories of offenses, including theft, drug violations, sexual offenses, and violent crime. And the organization wrote in an X post on Thursday, quote, of the 9,771 arrests in England, Wales, and Scotland, nearly 3,700 were foreign nationals. We have imported a huge problem, unquote. It noted that 79% of those arrested in 2025 for theft on British trains were foreigners, while migrants arrested for drug offenses, sexual offenses, and violent crime comprised 40%, 37%, and 36% of all detentions, respectively. For all offenses, foreign nationals were involved in 37.7% of arrests. And I'll just interject, that's more than one out of every three. Speaking to GB News, DMC's research director, Robert Bates, said of the British government, quote, they have made our trains unsafe. It is the responsibility of any sane government to end immigration and begin a program of mass deportations to protect the British people, unquote. Last week, the CMC, and again, that is short for Center for Migration Control, they published its findings from multiple other FOIA requests to police forces across England and Wales and found that 172,889 foreign national arrests had been made for the year ending March 31st, 2025. This is, if noted, or it noted, equated to 474 arrests every day on arrest every 183 seconds. Of these, 51,212 were from violent offenses, while 11,264 were in connection with a sexual offense. In several recommendations the think tank made to the government following its findings, the CMC called for Britain to, quote, follow the example set by U.S. President Donald Trump and introduce a red list of countries that are unable to obtain visas, unquote. And the reality is not just seen in Britain, but across wider Western Europe. In September last year, the French statistics agency, INSEE, I-N-S-E-E, revealed that 64% of violent robberies, physical and sexual violence in public transport in Paris are committed by foreigners, with 43% of this number being North African, who represent only 3.4% of the population. And I'm going to skip down a little bit. In the German state of Baden-Württemberg, foreigners are responsible for 62% of all crimes, despite being only 16% of the population. And there's a little bit more, but that gives you the data there. Let me see if there's anything else. In recent weeks, railway employees and their unions in Italy have expressed concerns about welfare following several high-profile attacks against staff, including the fatal stabbing of a 34-year-old train conductor on January 5th, 2026, outside Bologna's main railway station by a migrant. The workers are terrified, said Manuela Cavallaro, regional secretary of FIT-CISL. That must be an organization, I believe. I don't see it referenced elsewhere. And this is a quote from that person. The fear isn't just physical, it's psychological. You go to work knowing there's this person wandering around, watching you, approaching you, and you don't know how far he will go, unquote. That was from Zero Hedge. The part of the title was UK Migrant Crime Surge. That was by Tyler Durden, January 18, 2026. Well, now a little bit more about the attack on the church over the weekend, this past weekend. This is from Fox News. Anti-ICE agitator who stormed Minnesota church service also harassed congregants at Pete Hegseth Church. This is by Brian Flood, Fox News, January 20th. One of the anti-ICE agitators who stormed into a Twin Cities church Sunday has also been accused of harassing congregants at Secretary of War Pete Hegseth's church in Washington, D.C. Anti-ICE agitators stormed City's church sanctuary on Sunday, causing chaos and insisting that one of the pastors is the acting director of ICE's St. Paul field office. Protesters were heard shouting, "ICE out!" and "Justice for Rene Good" in the middle of services in front of shocked churchgoers. A man with the group was identified as William Kelly, who goes by the name The Woke Farmer on TikTok, where he has over 66,000 followers and regularly posts politically charged videos attacking ICE. President Donald Trump and members of his administration with profanity, that is, he attacks them on the videos. A member of Christ Church in Washington, D.C., who asked to remain anonymous, told Fox News Digital that he immediately recognized Kelly as a part of a group that has been pestering worshipers on a routine basis. And the Christ Church member said, "William Kelly is a regular outside our church. He screams incredibly vile and gross things at families, at children, at people. He calls my wife a C-blank, a whore, and a Nazi breeder. All sorts of fun things," unquote. Church members say the man was arrested by the United States Secret Service in December in a caught-on-camera ordeal that showed him berating a man as a Nazi and asking who he voted for. The Woke Farmer said the Secret Service is, quote, "moving forward disorderly conduct charges against him" in a recent video. The Secret Service did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Members of the Christ Church, where Hegseth attends, say they want to worship in peace and believe the vulgar shouting is extremely inappropriate. The anonymous Christ Church member said, quote, "it's been a good education for my children to understand what type of people use these words. He probably first showed up in September or October. He's been off and on since then. Since he was arrested by the Secret Service in early December, he's been on a road trip, out and about," unquote. Christ Church Associate Pastor Joe Rigney has no doubt that the man who stormed the Minnesota church has also tormented churchgoers at services. Rigney told Fox News Digital, quote, "we've had regular protests at our D.C. services for the last few months. A combination of paid professional agitators, as well as people who just show up periodically. We became aware of William Kelly because through that, he was one of the regular protesters each week. Kelly stood out because he was one of the more aggressive, angry, vile, profane protesters who would follow people to their car, yell at them, yell at children. Profanity-laden attacks on normal church members," Rigney continued. "When we saw the video come out of City's church in St. Paul, our security team flagged it for me and said, that's the same guy," unquote. And jumping down a little bit, Justin Overbaugh, Deputy Undersecretary of War for Intelligence and Security, also alleged the man storming Twin Cities Church in Minnesota was Kelly. And Overbaugh said, "this has been going on for months. While MPD provides security," and I guess that's Minnesota, I don't see the reference to that and to those initials. "While MPD provides security, they take no action when the man uses bullhorns to disrupt services, which is in clear violation of the law." The man's TikTok account also links to a GoFundMe page that identifies him as William Kelly. And he wrote, when asking for donations, quote, "road trip. Help me travel the nation, scolding the Gestapo for their bad decisions. No rest for demons. Our goal is to encourage people to stand up for what's right across the nation. Stand up for humanity," he wrote, when asking for his donations. The account has raised over $40,000. And of course, as we know, the protests against ICE have increased in Minnesota. Jumping down a little bit now. Let's see if there's anything else pertinent here. There's some vile quotes from him, but I'm going to read that over the air. Let's see. And breaking news, it just came out January 19th by Cassandra McDonald from the Gateway Pundit. Breaking: Department of Justice to charge Don Lemon of Lamont under the KKK Act for inciting church raid. And Hami Dillon, D-H-I-L-L-O-N, the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the Department of Justice, has announced that they plan to charge disgraced former CNN anchor Don Lemon, or I think he prefers to be called Lamont now. They are going to charge him under the KKK, Ku Klux Klan Act, a Reconstruction-era law enacted to combat terrorist activities by groups like the KKK. The impending charges stem from Lamont's involvement when a group of anti-ICE activists stormed a church in Minneapolis, disrupting a religious service and intimidating worshipers on Sunday. The Ku Klux Klan Act, formerly known as the Enforcement Act of 1871, prohibits conspiracies to threaten, injure, or intimidate individuals to prevent them from exercising their constitutional rights, including the free exercise of religion. According to reports, Lamont not only accompanied the protesters, but had prior knowledge of their plans to target the church, which was hosting a service at the time. Some have even alleged that he was the one who incited the protesters to target the church. Before the incident, Lamont is seen in his team's own footage discussing the, quote, secret operation, unquote, with activists, confirming they had the church's address, and even instructing his staff not to reveal the location. Lamont says in one clip, quote, "We're not going to give any of the information away," unquote. The former CNN anchor also acknowledges, quote, "We don't know what's happening. We kind of do, but we don't know how it's going to play out, right?" unquote. And again, our time is running out, so let me jump down just a little bit. On Monday, Dillon, and that was, let me see now, Amit Dillon, who was the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the Department of Justice, he appeared on the Benny Show to explain the legal implications. He said, quote, "The clue of the Klan Act is one of the most important federal civil rights statutes. It makes it illegal to terrorize and violate the civil rights of citizens. Whenever people conspire to do this, the Klan Act can be used," unquote. And she, so I guess that's a lady, I thought it was a gentleman, she emphasized that the full force of the federal government would be brought to bear on such disruptions, drawing parallels to how the Faith Act has been used against pro-life protesters outside abortion clinics. Everyone in the protest community needs to know that the fullest force of the federal government is going to come down and prevent this from happening and put people away for a long time," Dillon warned. As Dillon noted, if peaceful pro-life grandmas can face felony charges for praying outside clinics, then activists and so-called journalists who disrupt churches should expect the same accountability. Dillon also posted the interview and wrote, quote, "To those asking where the arrests are, Minnesota state prosecutors could have made arrests yesterday. The Department of Justice must first go before a federal judge to obtain an arrest warrant." She added, "Make no mistake, Attorney General Pam Bondi and the Justice Department will pursue federal charges in this case," unquote. Don Lamont has not yet publicly responded to the announcement. This is Lou speaking. I used to think that he said his name was Don Lemon. Was I mistaken, or did he somehow, before he was disgraced by CNN, did he somehow change his name to make it sound more French or more exotic? I don't know. Okay, we have a couple of other things. Won't get to them all today, though. I'll have to postpone some of these until next week. I'll give a little bit of this one. I think we have time for that. Oh, there's one other thing, though. Let me do this one other thing, because one or two people have been saying, you know, I sometimes talk about my native state of Massachusetts and its corruption and its problems. What about Maryland, the state where you now live? Well, here's a little thing I saw in my own local paper, which I thought was remarkable because it's just a small town newspaper, nothing like one of the big city papers. But this little article said voter roll secrecy raises transparency concerns. This is by Kate Sullivan. And it appeared in the paper, the Star Democrat out of Eastern Maryland, on January 17th. And I'll just do a little bit of it. And what some are calling a scandal of transparency, the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division, DOJ, has opened an inquiry into the Maryland State Board of Elections. And they're talking about compliance with voter registration laws, following troubling findings in a recent voter roll audit. Maryland drew scrutiny from the Department of Justice due to its implausibly high 98% voter registration rate. Comparatively, the national average is 69%, prompting an explanation, raising red flags among election integrity advocates who call this a textbook case of dirty voter rolls. Now, I have one criticism of this article. Overall, it's good. They don't say 98% of what. Well, what is 98% of what? It's a math person. That bothers me. But anytime you get 98% about voting, you have to raise the red flags and say, what are you talking about? No, nothing is 98%. If they mean, for example, that 98% of the people of the state have registered to vote, that's utterly ridiculous. And if they say that, it's obviously a lie. If they say 98% of the people on the voter registration are authentic voters in the state, they're alive and well, that still seems way out of line when they say a comparable national average is only 69%. 98 compared to 69, that is quite a difference. And if you ask me, it smacks of dishonesty, can we say? Fraud? Oh, let's see now, corruption? I think all of those fit. And the interesting thing is, if you read on, and I just don't have time to read it all, it says that the state of Maryland is stonewalling the State Board of Elections compliance, is stonewalling the Federal Department of Justice. They have not responded to Department of Justice inquiries. They've been giving the Department of Justice, the federal government, the brush off. And you can bet if they were honest, they wouldn't feel the need to do that. So, just a little something about Maryland, and I'll have more with passing time. But I thought you'd be interested in that. Now, there's a really good article that came out of the Gateway Pundit. Many of you, Greg Gutfeld, many of you hear Greg on Fox News and other venues. And it says, Gutfeld obliterates the left with brutal truth after churches stormed by radical activists. This is by Jim Hoft, January 20th, 2026. And I'll have time to read some of it. I'm sure I won't get through all of it, but I'll read some of the most interesting parts of it. Again, it was from the Gateway Pundit. Greg Gutfeld delivered one of the most savage and unapologetic monologues of his career, ripping the radical left to shreds following the shocking storming of a church in Minnesota by far-left activists. While the corporate media rushed to downplay or justify the desecration of a house of worship, Gutfeld did what no one else on television was willing to do, tell the truth. Appearing on Fox News' The Five, and if you are not a Fox News listener, that occurs on Fox News TV every weekday at 5 o'clock, hence the name The Five, Gutfeld dismantled the left's narrative piece by piece, exposing what he described as a dangerous and hollow ideology driven not by compassion, but by, quote, suicidal empathy, unquote, and rescue delusions. Gutfeld pointed out the staggering hypocrisy on display. And here are the few things he pointed out. The same activists who invented safe spaces, that's mainly for abortion clinics, I'll interject, were now violently violating them, storming a church, frightening children, harassing pastors. These are the same people who call conservatives fascists. Gutfeld noted while behaving like authoritarian enforcers themselves. They claim to defend women, yet defend men who abuse women. They accuse others of hate while hunting political enemies. They preach tolerance while terrorizing families of worship. People were interested in these podcasts. Perhaps the most damning question raised by Gutfeld was also the simplest. Why weren't the police there? Every other high-risk protest scenario, Antifa versus Proud Boys, Hamas supporters versus Jewish students, pro-life activists versus feminists, law enforcement separates opposing groups to prevent violence. But not here. Gutfeld suggested this was no accident. The chaos, he argued, was allowed, even encouraged, to create a spectacle and advance a political storyline of protesters versus persecutors, no matter how dishonest that framing may be. Gutfeld saved his most profound critique for the end. These rescue fantasies, he explained, exist because leftist culture has stripped women and men of real, meaningful roles and replaced them with performative outrage. And there's a lot more. It is a very good article. I would suggest you go to the Gateway Pundit and print it out. January 20th, 2026. And the title just reads, Mike, M-I-C, Draw. Gutfeld obliterates the left with little brutal truth after churches stormed by radical activists. And maybe I'll read a little bit more of that next week. Well, music's coming on. Our time is up for today. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to write to me, maybe even make a little contribution, we could definitely use it. It'd stay on the air. Write to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. Thank you all for listening. Tune in again next week.